This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal. If anyone's out there, we're having problems with the net, with getting connected and all that. I'll try to make it come out right. We're going to have a debate today between Chuck Baldwin on the one hand and Morgan Reynolds on the other. Chuck is going to make some reference to websites. He'll introduce that himself. Morgan to Judy Wood's book, Where Did the Towers Go? Now, they're each going to have alternating 25-minute periods. I'm going to abbreviate or eliminate the breaks so that we'll be able to do this even though we're starting 15 minutes late. So let me begin by introducing Chuck Baldwin. I'll be keeping the time. I will not be commenting. That will be, it'll be strictly Chuck present what he wants to present, then I'll turn to Morgan. He'll present what he wants to present, and we'll go from there. Okay? So they should not be asking questions during the 25 minutes the other has available to them. Okay. We're going to start with Chuck Baldwin first. Chuck, go ahead.
Hello, Jim. How are you doing today? Been looking forward to this debate here for a very long time, more than a year, actually. I would like to direct everybody that's going to listen, whether they're live or archived, to my webpage, which is on 911scholars.ning.com. However, here's what you need to put into your search engine. These letters, A, these are small letters, A, B, B, R, V, dot, C, O, dot, UK, slash, V, D, and then a capital B at the end. All letters are small letters except the last letter, capital B. I'll say it one more time. A, B, B, R, V, dot co dot uk slash v d capital b, and you will arrive at my PowerPoint posters. I believe all of these are posters from PowerPoint. Anyway, all right, I'm going to start. I've got columns and rows. On my pages, there are five columns and four rows, and we're going to be dealing with three pages today. We're going to start off on page one, and we're going to start us off with a big bang or no bang, a lot of heat or no heat. The first graphic that you see, PowerPoint poster, is in the first column in the first row. That would be 1-1. Page one, row one, column one, and it's entitled, No Heat, Duh. Pull that up. If you got Explorer 8, you can blow up 200% and get a real nice big picture. The title here is No Heat, Duh. Everything that looks hot or glows hot or burns hot is not hot and is disinfo via Dr. Judy Wood's scientific reasoning. She says, in effect, don't believe your lying eyes. And you see the poster here with some pictures on it from some of my other posters. It's like a composite. And every one of them has the word duh with an exclamation point. It's called, There's No Evidence of High Heat. This is a quote from Judy Wood. No evidence of high heat, that is all disinformation, Dr. Judy Wood. That's a quote. In the first picture, you'll see an automobile flaming, the tires, everything's burning. It says duh. Next one, you'll see another one. The third picture you see is a picture of Dr. Judy Wood's book, like a textbook, entitled Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11. I have a little small picture of Judy Wood there that I inserted myself. So that's not normally out on the book. The picture to the bottom left is a NYPD automobile in which the engine is in intense flame and smoke. The next picture is a part of a column or beam from one of the towers, which has been totally fried all the way through, melted, boiled away, so much so that probably 98% of that is missing, and you have these big holes, circular holes in there with sharp edges. Anybody that's dealt with the towers and this information is familiar with that picture. And the last picture on this page is the meteorite, which has a wide variety of different materials. You can see pipes and hoses and solid metal, possibly some file cabinets, paper, who knows what all is in that. It's compressed. It's been heated to extremely high heats, melting, a lot of melted metal in there, steel, aluminum, the whole works. Who knows what all is in that. Anyway, at the bottom here it says, any heat that you see here is all disinformation, according to Dr. Judy Wood. Nothing in this graphic is actually burning. They just look hot. Thanks for that information. You are now my teacher guru, and I am your DEW groupie, since I learned this. Okay, let's go to the top arrow and go back to the pictures page. And now we're going to go way over to the right. We're going to go to row 1, column 5. The first picture there, it's called 1A, referencing Hurricane Erin. Dr. Judy Wood is very strongly, let's just pull it up. If you got, like I say, Explorer 8, blow it up 200%. The title here is by referencing, well, this is what's actually on the picture, by referencing Hurricane Erin, Dr. Judy Wood is very strongly inferring that the energy source for her DEWs is the Tesla coil-like hurricane itself. The hurricane is like a Tesla coil, swirling around and around. They use it in physics labs along with Van de Graaff generators. Judy has referred to a possible outer space energy source in one of her interviews, or more than one of her interviews. What you see here is a picture of the a map of the day of 9/11. There's a trail which is plotted. I don't know how many miles between each point, but it is a track of Hurricane Erin going towards the United States, towards the states over here, the upper states, New York, Pennsylvania, Maine, all those states. And she says it's going directly at New York, which may or may not. You could maybe a 500 mile left or right in any direction could be possibly right. All right, let's go way over on the right hand side. It says this Canadian Hurricane Center map tracks the path location and the corresponding timeline for Hurricane Erin from the dates September 8, 2001. To September 16, 2001, where 9/11 falls right in between. It does appear to be approaching the New York State area before redirecting itself, apparently and abruptly, towards the northeast direction to eventual dissipation and extinction. Chuck says Erin was not responsible in any way for 9/11, and its occurrence on 9/11 was entirely a non-related coincidence. All right, over to the left of that, where I just read, if Hurricane Erin is not the source of destructive energy used, then Judy Wood has no Hutchinson effect energy source, although she did mention outer space. Now, I don't know what that means, space stations, satellites orbiting or whatever to have this energy source. She's got to have an energy source somewhere, and we don't know what it is, and she hasn't told us for years and years, so I don't know if she actually knows. I doubt if she does. All right, the fact that fact would mean that Dr. Judy Wood's hypothesis is incorrect, and that another far simpler hypothesis should be considered by the 9/11 research community. Chuck, that's myself, says that nanothermite and mini neutron bombs, and also thick steel cutting cutter charges, and high explosives. I added those because this is an old graphic. So there's four items I'm now pushing. Can explain all of Judy's concerns and needs to be looked at very seriously. All right, summary. The summary down below here on Hurricane Erin as energy source hypothesis. Where else could Judy's Hutchinson field effects demolecularization, pulverization, and rustification energy come from? If it is not from the Tesla coil like Hurricane Erin, might it come from HAARP? And at which station of the HAARP? There's at least five stations around the world. Might it come from special and unknown reserve? stored energy satellites in space. Might it come from an underground news tabloid news, UFOs? Where could Judy's World Trade Center destructive polarization energy have come from? Are Judy's energy utilization hypotheses worth further time-consuming consideration? Well, obviously they are. All right, here's at the bottom, I made a note just today. It says, late in 2011, I came to my most recent conclusion that the destruction and micropulverization of the World Trade Center complex can be attributed to four following types of explosive and or incendiary devices. Number one, thermite or nanothermite. Number two, shaped cutter charges for very thick steel instantaneous cutting, possibly C4 type are related. I can't really pinpoint, I'll just say related in case there's some new materials we don't know about. Third one is high explosives, possibly RDX, HMX type, or some other related. And I have a table that I went over on one of my interviews where we went over about 30 items that could be possible in terms of the chemistry. Number four is mini neutron bombs are related mini nukes. Hundreds of very small ones appropriately placed in the towers and other buildings, especially the one with large, essentially empty cavities, like World Trade Center 6 had these big holes in them, World Trade Center 5 and others, with the holes in them as viewed from above. That would be the mini neutron nukes, and we'll go over that. We have already on my interviews. All right, as time goes by, more information is uncovered and reviewed. Modifications could be made to my basic World Trade Center complex destruction thesis. That is the way science and the scientific method works. Okay, so let's go back, hit the upper arrow left, and we'll go back and we'll hit the next graphic, which is going to be row one again, column four. This one right next to the one we just did. It's number one, Judy Wood claims that some operationally unknown. Pull that one up. All right, Judy Wood claims that some operationally unknown and totally unidentified DEWs utilizing mixed and interfering energy beams somehow siphoned off the most massive natural energy of Hurricane Aaron on 9/11 in New York City and destroyed the World Trade Center complex. All right, let's move down to the picture. You'll see a hurricane over there. An arrow pointing down, and you'll see plenty that we can read about. Here's your question, or fact. Although Hurricane Aaron was located just off Long Island throughout the day of 9/11, both the approach in days before and the presence of the storm on that day went almost totally unreported. Hurricane Aaron was omitted on the morning weather map, even though that portion of the Atlantic Ocean where she stood was covered by the map. Astronauts gazing down said they could see the drifting plumes from the destruction of World Trade Center 2 and 1, but made no mention of the highly visible Aaron. Why? Okay, so she's inferring that Hurricane Aaron is definitely involved. Why even mention it if it's not involved? Because it doesn't mean anything if it's not. The answer is, if this is true, then the co-conspirator of the U.S. government, which would be the determined controllers of the media, the co-conspirators with the government, would not have wanted Hurricane Aaron interfering with their well-planned 9/11 calamitous days events in the minds of New Yorkers and the followers of mainstream media offerings. They would not want Americans to be preoccupied with the day's destructive events occurring in New York City. Mainstream media controllers broadcast 9/11 events on every main news, TV, and radio newscast channel. No distractions of an imminent approaching hurricane were desirable if the full fear-mongering psychological effects of the 9/11 events were to take a strong and long-lasting effect and hold on the minds and psyches of all Americans and the worldwide TV viewers on that most disastrous day. This is all so very easy to state and to prove, since mainstream media refuses to publish in order to discuss 9/11 facts and truth. Since they've gotten their thing out, their thesis out with their scientists, and they feel like they're basically finished, and the mainstream people don't listen to any underground news. That's all they got. Almost everybody I talk to everywhere doesn't have a clue. They all still think planes and fires brought down the Twin Towers, and most of them still don't know about Building 7. All right, here's another answer. Judy Wood, PhD engineering professor and author of the new 9/11 book entitled Where Did the Towers Go? Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11, has suggested and at least indirectly claimed that the energy associated with Hurricane Erin was somehow transformed into combinations of various very highly energetic and very destructively interfering electromagnetic wavelengths, where somehow they were somehow redirected at the World Trade Center 7 building complex, 7 buildings in that complex, and that the towers and buildings were somehow Hutchinson Field affected by some operationally unknown and totally identified directed energy weapon, DEW beams, whose energy originated in Hurricane Erin or from outer space and was somehow converted into direct energy field effects that were observed and photographed in its many apparent destructive forms and somehow accurately redirected into the three towers and other World Trade Center buildings. Judy claims no explosives, nor thermite incendiaries, nor big planes, nor jet fuel explosions, nor fires were used to destroy the towers. In the World Trade Center complex, and all destruction was due strictly and solely to unidentified and undescribed DEWs that run on nature's free energy that can be somehow siphoned off and then redirected precisely onto some desirable targets to be demolished by demolecularization, pulverization, rustification, I left off dustification, by interfering wavelength combinations and the resultant related, I got fires down there. I don't know if that's because she said there weren't any fires and there was no heat. I don't know where I got that. Just to name the major forms of observable destruction that Dr. Judy has published on. So, over on the picture says the controlled media deception was not to hide Hurricane Erin as a potential World Trade Center destructive energy source, but it was to distract or eliminate the attention the public would give to it to lessen the psychological effect. So the media didn't want it interfering because people wouldn't show up at the World Trade Center if a hurricane was coming in, flooding would occur. You would not have the dramatic effect that they had pre-planned for who knows how many years. All right, let's go back again and pick up the next poster. And the next poster is on page one again. It's going to be in row four, column one. So we'll move down to the fourth row. That's the bottom row. And it'll be the first one. First picture there, which is a graph. And it's 10C. Number 10C, accounting for all the Earth's magnetic flux lines distortions. Pull that one up. Accounting for all the Earth's magnetic flux line distortions data on 9/11. At the 6 Alaskan recording stations via mini nukes, high explosives, thermite. Well, thermite I don't really think has anything to do with those. I got it down there. It should be cutter charges that cut through thick steel and explode in the process of doing it. Thermite is not explosives. However, cutter charges with C4 or some other chemical are explosive. And that what was, in my opinion, that is what was exploding on the surface outer perimeter columns and big, huge blocks, small blocks, and big, big, huge blocks that were coming off like tubes, trailing all the heated materials behind them, the vapor chemical trails, and thick steel cutter charges, possibly C4. All right, now this is a very interesting poster. This is Judy's poster. A lot of my photos actually come from Judy's stuff so that I can annotate on top of it and show you how my interpretation works and opposes hers. All right, here's her statement. Magnetometer readings from six stations in Alaska recorded abrupt shifts in the Earth's magnetic field as each of the major destructive events unfolded at the World Trade Center on 9/11, and why? Okay, let's look over way on the right side. At the bottom, you'll see the picture of Alaska, and you'll see the stations, the six stations she talked about recording these distortions of the magnetic flux lines which go around the Earth. They surround the Earth. All right, these, we're in the first block. I'm going to read it off. These magnetic field flux line readings are presented here from 6 a.m. on 9/11/01 to just past 12 noon on 9/12/01, a time interval of 18 hours. The recordings were taken at five Alaskan stations as indicated below. All right, what I've got is little text boxes. And I've got arrows pointing to each of the major lines that she's marked as the major events, such as the alleged plane crashes into the two towers, the pulverization demolishments of the two towers. That's the first four vertical lines, and then the last line is World Trade Center 7 around 5 o'clock. There's a time scale at the top that you can keep track all the way across. All right, now the first one, World Trade Center 1 block, way in the upper left corner. World Trade Center 1 alleged plane crash producing roadrunner-like cutout effect, but from planet-shaped cutter charges at the 96th floor. So the government says planes went in and started fires, and the pile driver crushed down scenario of the government. But what I'm saying is no plane crashes, and it looks like me and Morgan agree on that. We agree on a lot of things, except for the basic theory of Judy Woods and my explanation using explosives, incendiaries, and that nature. All right, you see the first line was that was World Trade Center 1. The second one is right below it, World Trade Center 2 alleged plane crash, producing roadrunner-like cutout effect, but it was really from planet-shaped cutter charges on the 80th floor, so powerful that they could instantaneously, I have no idea, it's less than a microsecond, blow through over at least 4, 5, 6 inches of steel or more. Just depends upon how much you want to put there and the shape you're going to take it. And I'll add this now, that the art students, the 150 art students from Israel, I believe that this was their assignment. You're going to artistically set up the entire surfaces of the perimeter with cutter charges so that when they blow out in chunks and small chunks symmetrically. And the mini nukes will blow up the inside, and the thermite will melt the columns. There won't be a lot of explosions or anything. It'll just melt through the columns and do all the lathering and all of that. And the high explosives may have been used too. I think it will mainly use on World Trade Center 7. All right, the next block down. Actually, I got these in reverse order. It should be instead of World Trade Center 1. Is top-down demolished. It should be World Trade Center 2, because that's the one that got hit. Well, let's see. Yeah. This is the first one that collapsed. It was World Trade Center 2. So that first one, instead of World Trade Center 1, should be the second one, World Trade Center 2. Demolished and pulverized into sub-micro-sized dust particles, and much of the steel is boiled to its molten state and into gray iron spheroids found throughout the dust that resulted, as per chemical analysis by various people and agencies, including the government, USAG, the bank people hired. They all came up with these same microspheres, which you couldn't tell they were iron spheres unless you looked at them under a microscope. They just looked like a component part of the dust. But none of them found steel dust particles from demolecularization, supposedly, that Judy said. Only steel or iron that they found at all, were the microspheres that had to be boiled. The surface tension would cause them to form spheroids, and there are trillions of them throughout the entire area that were blown out. Who knows how far those spheroids got blown out. All right. in the middle here, at the top, this time interval shows the greatest amplitudinal fluctuations of the day.
1 minute.
The explosions, let's see here. All right. World Trade Center is destroyed. The EMPs and the electromagnetic pulses are massive, high-energy, compressed, and destructive shock waves in nearby buildings, glass, cars, and other items. The direct results of many, many, many nuclear explosions and possibly all the destroyed World Trade Center complex buildings. Okay, I guess I'm not going to be able to finish any more if I only got less than a minute.
Well, you can use it if you want, Chuck.
Okay, World Trade Center 2 there in the center. At the bottom should be World Trade Center 1. It's top-down demolished and pulverized into some micro-sized dust particles. Much of the steel is boiled in its molten state and into gray iron spheroids found throughout the dust that resulted, as verified, analysis of the dust samples by PhD chemist Niels Herrick and 7 or 8 certified scientists, several independent analysis agencies.
Okay, Chuck, good. Thank you very much.
If I fell in love with you, would you promise to be true and help me understand? 'Cause I've been in love before and I found that love was more than just holding hands. If I give my heart to you, I must be sure from the very start that you would love me more than her. If I trust in
Even Bush admits that Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11. Our own FBI acknowledged it has no hard evidence that ties Osama bin Laden to 9/11. But if Saddam had nothing to do with 9/11, and if Osama had nothing to do with 9/11, then who did it? Who did it? The 9/11 conspiracy provides the answer. Discover the big picture. Learn what we know now. Find out what it means. 11 experts contribute to exposing the truth as the anatomy of an atrocity. Edited by James H. Fetzer. Buy it now if you have the courage to face the truth. Just don't think you're going to like it. The 9/11 conspiracy provides the answer.
Veer Radio is listener supported. We need your donations to pay for live internet streaming radio, our toll-free call-in number, and our website, free MP3 archive links, and interactive forums.
Your lovin' give me a bell, but your lovin' don't pay
radionetwork.com and click on the Make a Donation button.
Morgan, you ready to rock and roll?
Yes.
Go for
yes,
it.
Yes, I am. Okay, I'm going to focus very heavily, if not exclusively, on the evidence about what happened at the World Trade Center on September 11, 2001. And we're going to go from relatively simple, understandable evidence to more complex evidence. And I'm going to have, I have two prefaces, however. One is a disclaimer. We are all in our debt for Dr. Wood's tireless, brilliant work. She's the only scientist on this case. When we actually describe what a scientist is about. Now, today, however, I speak for myself. Not Dr. Wood. Any misstatement of the evidence or interpretation of same I may make is solely my responsibility. I repeat, my sole responsibility. Next, I want to give you the, my second prefatory remark is to listen to a 1.5 minute clip from a British commentator.
Anyone in my view who denies their research without taking a close look at it is either stupid or they're on the payroll. And that's a bold thing to say, and I wouldn't usually bother to say things like that, but I feel quite strongly about that. And I've seen her interviewed countless times. I've gone over her research, you know, at some length, to say the least. And I've seen numerous attempts to debunk this woman, and they fail. And they fail because she is not dealing with anything other than what is there right in front of our eyes. And she's pretty on top of that. And as you say, she definitely exposes the treachery and duplicity of some very influential factions in the 9/11 truth movement. And they just totally dismiss her work. And you cannot dismiss Judy Wood's work without being, as I said, either just plain bloody ignorant or completely compromised in some way. So I think it's very important. But she's certainly onto something that's highly relevant and highly worth a look. And, it, you know, admittedly, it was a long time after, you know, the events of 9/11 that I came to this. And I'm pretty much of the view now that she's the only person who's put together what is potentially a complete version of events, of what happened and how it happened. And as we said, she only really takes the evidence, and she avoids theorizing, which is a very, very wise move on her part.
Okay, I'm going to go to evidence. The way I've ordered this is I hope to discuss 9 areas of evidence in this segment. They are debris, bathtub, seismic impact, sound, dust, holes, cars, deformed steel, and 9th, weird fires. Let's begin with debris, which is discussed in depth at page 171, chapter 9. Where did the buildings go? Of course, it's discussed more incidentally, or I mean, it begins on page 12. But where did the buildings go? And I want to read 2 firefighters' comments that are at the beginning of this chapter, both of whom were survivors of stairwell B, which went from floor 107 down to the 6th sub-basement in a straight line, if you will, vertically. Okay, Jay Jonas, who's one of these, I believe it was 14 firefighters who survived. I looked and said, guys, there used to be 106 floors above us, and now I'm seeing sunshine. There's nothing above us. That big building doesn't exist. These are the biggest office buildings in the world, and I didn't see one desk or one chair or one phone, nothing. Next, James McGlynn, firefighter, survivor, stairwell B. We just kept telling them we're in the B stairwell. I remember everybody had the same exasperation I did. We must have told them 100 times, B stairwell in the 2nd floor, 3rd floor, 4th floor of the North Tower. I mean, B stairwell, 2nd, 3rd, 4th floor, North Tower. B stairwell, North Tower. Boys, where are you? Response, North Tower, stairway B, 2nd, 3rd floor. You could hear they didn't understand where we were. I'm keep going, my God, why aren't you listening? Then they said, where's the North Tower? I was like, what do you mean, where's the North Tower? It was unimaginable. Now, on this same page, 171, we have the cover photo. This was always my favorite. And I did work almost daily with Dr. Wood for 3 or 4 years. Okay, my favorite photo turns up on the cover. Okay, now it's on page 171. Does this look like a collapse? This is a building very obviously turning to dust in midair. And this confirmed by our 2 firefighters. Okay, a couple of other remarks. Now, next page. This figure should make it clear to anyone that the depicted conditions, and I quote, are inconsistent with a gravity-driven collapse. The destructive process seen here involves pulverization that is nearly instantaneous, not a collapse of steel upon steel. If the buildings had been blown up with explosives, 500,000 tons of debris would have slammed to the ground for each tower. Bombs did not turn buildings into powder. They only break them into chunks, and that in turn must slam to the ground. That's what explosives do. They fragment things, and there's a blast wave. Okay, all we need to do is talk about debris, just about, to prove false 5 failed theories that I will enumerate in the next segment. Okay, second area of evidence, the bathtub. Chapter 5 is devoted to the bathtub, and this is 5 out of her 43 conclusions toward the back of the book, 5 out of 43. So the bathtub, by that count, is very important. Now, page 45, let's pull out a few things about the bathtub. Some people may not know that the World Trade Center, when the deep bathtub or slurry wall was built into the beyond the shoreline of the Hudson River originally. Okay, you got it. And then there's the pass train tunnels that come up from under the Hudson River past meaning Port Authority Trans Hudson. The trains that run, and understand majority of the WTC employees lived in New Jersey. Okay, you crack the bathtub, those tunnels fill with water, they flood the downtown Manhattan, and the world, the financial center, is underwater. Okay, bathtub, real important role. It's 70 feet down to the bedrock that the towers were anchored in. Four buildings of the World Trade Center were in the deep bathtub, and two, that is, buildings four and five, were in the shallow. Okay, let's look at page 46 in our textbook. Here we see, according to the Wall Street Journal architecture critic, Ada Louise Huxtable, this structure, quote, saved all of lower Manhattan from the waters of the Hudson River, unquote. That is the so-called bathtub. And I quote from the New York Times article, to the relief of the engineers, there is no evidence that the 70-foot deep retaining wall around the basements has been damaged or breached, although the collapse of the towers left one section perilously unsupported, unquote. And then you may recall the Spike TV documentary about the iron workers at Ground Zero, and one of the iron workers remarked, quote, you know, it was amazing. It really didn't damage that much. If they had fallen over sideways, could you imagine the damage to lower Manhattan, unquote. Okay, and then we skip down a few lines here on page 46. No bathtub structure could remain unscathed after a mountain of material from a quarter-high building was dropped on it. Not just once, but twice. Over, a million tons of material that's a quarter mile high slams into this bathtub? There's no way. It could be anything but broken, and an ensuing flood. Didn't happen. Go to item 3, seismic impact, which is treated very thoroughly in chapter 6, which begins on page 61. What about the seismic signal impact, earth energy earthquake equivalent on that day? Now, here's the one that is really hard to believe, at least to me. You know what the signal... Okay, let's look at the King Dome. You remember the King Dome? That's the benchmark that these seismic signals are compared with. King Dome out in Seattle was destroyed in March of 2000. Okay, that registered a low twos. Actually, I don't have that right handy, but it's a 2-1 or 2-2 or 2-3. Okay, it had under 800 pounds of pressure, we'll call it, per square inch. Okay, the weight. You know what the towers were? Over 23,000 pounds per square inch of stress or pressure. So we've got 30-fold increase, okay? So what is common sense says if that thing comes down, all of that is going to make a bigger signal. There's more potential energy from a tower, 110 stories versus something like 20, as I recall, for the kingdom. And what signal did we get from the towers? 2-1 and 2-3. In other words, you should have 30 times in log terms is 1.5. You should have had the 2.1 plus 1.5 or 2.3. You should have nearly a 4 seismic impact. Didn't happen. So in other words, hey, this evidence is terribly consistent. It all points to the same thing. There was no collapse. There was no conventional controlled demolition. And we're almost sure there was no explosions. And what cutter charges got to do this escapes me. At one point, Dr. Wood, who is hardly writing a humorous text, I got to read this to you back on page 125. I found this amusing, and I assume it's meant to be. Quote, the only contribution thermite could have made to the demise of the buildings would be the added weight to the buildings, unquote. Okay, now we go to sound. Sound is treated in chapter 6 as well. Yes. And it's only one of her 43 conclusions. Okay, page 61, back to chapter 6. The remarkable thing was the lack of reports or recording audio for big booms. Clearly explosives, they have light, they release pressure, they have sound, they have heat, whether they are conventional explosives or nuclear devices. So we have a problem here. In addition, you don't hear any screeching and screaming from metal crashing on metal. And this should be immense. That is the World Trade Center, Building 7. Oh, I overlooked this. Building 7 had a seismic reading impact of 0.6. This is background earth-shaking, non-shaking virtually, undetectable. Right? Well, any micro-earthquake 2.0 or less is not detectable by us. That is ordinary shaking that we can feel. Okay, in other words, the Building 7, wow, you want to talk about a nothing impact. Okay, then sound, back to sound, and you know how Dr. Wood is a great teacher, how to illustrate things. Well, here's an example. If the World Trade Center, which was a 47-story building with a pretty big footprint, bigger than the towers, of course, weighed an estimated 240,000 tons. If you had dump trucks, each one weighing 20 tons, that would be 12,000 dump trucks crashing into the basement of the World Trade Center 7. Or it would be 25,000 crashing dump trucks for the... And so you, there are lots of statements. She does favor us with a great deal of not just forensic and scientific evidence, but eyewitness testimony to this effect. And let me read this sentence to conclude this discussion of sound. Audio-video recordings during the collapse of that building, WTC-7, were reported to have recorded low-level street conversations, but not the overwhelming sounds one would expect if 240,000 tons of material were in the process of slamming to the ground. Did you see any photos of the 3,000 truckloads of steel being driven away? Neither did I. That would assume 80 tons per truckload. Okay, five, dust. Of course, dust. This is a huge factor. This is dust is the topic of 10 out of the 43 conclusions at the back of the book. So chapter 8 is the first treatment of dust, page 131, for listeners who have the book. Now, those who don't, buy the book. You wanted an investigation, an unbiased investigation of 9/11? Most people who say that are liars, first of all. It's like the 9/11 truth movement. This is about as persuasive as George W. Bush invading countries in order to bring democracy and freedom and the American way. You know, who believes this stuff? Okay, justification, chapter 8. Let's go to... the first picture, which is on, yes, page 131. There you see the towers in the street. That is about 1 inch or more of fine dust. Now, where's the pile? It's so-called. It's a misnomer. The rubble, pile is certainly under 2% of the building height. We see the paucity of steel. Where are the toilets, the computers, office furniture? There's 1,000 persons missing with no remains, etc. Where did the buildings go? Let's go to the next chapter, 9, which is page 171. Here's my favorite photo, again, about what happened. You want to see what happened? It's a dust bubbler. Hey, I grew up in Milwaukee, and Dr. Wood at the back points out that Kohler, the famous plumbing fixtures manufacturer, turned out the first bubbler, what was it, 1880s or something, right, which is a drinking fountain. Okay, what debris pile is the first topic, and then if we look at her her figure, let's see, we might have done this one. Oh, yes, we did. That was in the debris discussion. Turn to page 174, and below the picture where we see, she offers us plenty of evidence that figure 160 on page 173, where did the building go? This is from the ground level, and you can see the base of building 6 after the two towers went away. Okay, you can see it from the south of the World Trade Center. In other words, you can see right across this as one of, actually it was probably McGlynn remarked, you know, I came out of that stairwell B and it was like a football field. There, in actual, I quote from page 176, quote, in actuality, there was no pile, unquote. Now, some people, of course, say, oh, we packed a bunch of floors and debris into the sub-basement, 70 feet. Well, you've got 150 feet to kind of minimum to pack in. So there should have been another 70, 80 feet on top. Well, none of this happened, of course, as we know from the bathtub. The damage was light. The path train in there only had damage to 4 out of 7 cars. Okay. Now, in figure 167, which is on page 178, solid pieces of building can be seen dissolving into dust as they fall. Remember that controversy a few years ago? There's no other explanation for what we see. Witnesses like Tim McGinn of the New York Police Department, not McGlynn, McGinn, said, quote, I was standing there for a couple of seconds thinking, where the F is the tower? I simply couldn't comprehend it, unquote. That's on page 180. Okay, maybe I should spend a couple more minutes on the dust cloud rollout, which is covered in chapter 14, page 297. There's all kinds of surprising things in the book, and this is one of them. ABC reporters were amazed at the whole, where'd the towers go? And this is Peter Jennings, George Stephanopoulos, and Robert Krawlich. Okay. Furthermore, there were reports that the dust cloud rolling out was cooler than the ambient temperature. People stumbled out alive. There's no evidence that the cloud was hot. We have burned cars in peculiar ways, but we don't have bodies that are burned. Now, there are also reports of a burning sensation when it came in contact with the skin. It's also described as itchy, but that doesn't mean it's a high temperature. Now, this towering, everywhere you look, by the way, we see the following proposition from Arthur Conan Doyle, Jr. You see, but you don't observe. And Dr. Wood is uniquely qualified and we'll call it differently abled to see things we don't notice because she's an observing scientist. Okay, in this case, you can see what she sees is that the towering dust cloud is very significant because it's not a collapse with ground level dust billowing up. It's almost like a wall, you know. And David Hanshew, one of the photographers on site, remarked, quote, the whole building was just disintegrated, unquote. That's on page 305. Another photographer, she quotes, I saw the building starting to come apart, unquote. Okay, I think I need to move here to the conclusion on dust. There's a clear difference between the concrete chunks found in a typical controlled demolition and micron-sized dust particles that were created, on 9/11. The sheer amount of dust, the unusual behavior of that dust attests to the fact that no model of controlled demolition, thermite, or burning airplane fuel was at work in the destruction of the towers. Unquote. That's on page 318. Okay, let's move to Fuzzballs, chapter 15. And here we see the continuing fuming when people stir up the dust around the feet. Quote, these very fine particles are being inhaled by first responders and all others working in that area on 9/11 and for months afterward, unquote. Go to page 327. And there's a discussion of the size of these fine particles. The Delta Group at the University of California at Davis and the Lawrence Berkeley Lab studied the particle size. And this was from a sample 1.1 miles to the northeast of the World Trade Center. Well, these particles are so small, under a millionth of a meter, in other words, under a micron, they're the size, they're smaller than a red blood cell, and they're about the size of DNA. What, can you show me the explosive or the thermite that can do this, can account for this? That's all I need to say there. To conclude, but from the Delta Group, these are the highest levels of anti-human pollutants we have ever seen in over 7,000 measurements we have made of very fine air pollution throughout the world, including Kuwait and China. Okay, holes. I've covered the five, what I believe are the five most important pieces of evidence about what happened at the World Trade Center, and any theory, quote unquote, must account for, be consistent with this evidence. Then we have holes, cars, anomalous, incredible things. We have deformed steel and then weird fires. I'm going to have to carry that over, I think, to the next section. But until Jim cuts me off, I will go, make a couple comments about holes.
Song, they've been on song.
Would you think if I sang out a tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song, and I'll try not to sing out of key. Oh, I can buy a little help from my friend. I can hire a little help.
Okay, second chance. I kept listening, trying to find out what actually did all this. Morgan didn't seem to mention what was actually causing all this. Just supposed evidence here for what did it. He said that explosives couldn't do it. Well, certainly nukes can do it, down to nano-sized particles. And I don't know if you're arguing against Stephen Jones, who's, and these other people are saying that thermite is explosive, but I have never, ever, not in the many, many, many hours I've been on the radio, ever said that thermite is explosive. I always said it's not explosive. The explosive components, the way I see it, are in the perimeter columns. Like I say, the art students were doing their artistic jigsaw puzzle, shape charging of all these components. Small at the very top when it started, as you move down the tower, big, huge blocks, like a jigsaw puzzles, all blown out with big tubes of streaming, chemtrails behind them. So I need, in the next section, hopefully Morgan will tell us exactly what did all this, if it wasn't explosives, and how it did it. What it looked like, whatever it was. He didn't mention DEWs at all, or Hutchinson field effects. He just gave the evidence. So we do need to know what's responsible for this, because I'm telling you the four things that I say are responsible. Non-explosive thermite, used strictly to cut through the interior steel columns of all three towers, where the lathering was blowing out. That's all aluminum oxide vapors and highly energetic mini BBs, steel BBs, all, who knows how long, over an hour, just degrading the columns in World Trade Center 1 and in 7. Now, I don't know about, number 2 went down first, and I didn't see any pictures of lathering there, but for 1 and 7 I did. And I don't know if anybody's got photos of lathering for the other tower. Perhaps there was, and I don't know. I didn't get it. Mini noose can very, very definitely give you sub-micro and probably nano-sized particles because there's a hell of a lot more energy. We're talking about super, super high temperatures, even in mini nukes. It's just a smaller explosive. You get temperatures in the millions of degrees that would totally vaporize steel. Let's see here. I agree that it was all going into powder or dust. If you want to call it dustified, it's particles vaporized. I agree with that. It didn't mess with the bathtub. We're agreeing on that because mini nukes would push this stuff out, upwards and outwards long distances so that when it hit the ground, it would be spread out and over a longer period of time, just like what we call impulse in physics. There's not much damage when you spread out a force over a period of time. If you put it on a very short period of time, you got a high impulse or impact with a lot of damage. That's just basic physics. Let's see here. So the seismic signal, of course, would not be great with mini nukes and cutter charges. Mainly the mini nukes is what's going to do the pulverizing. Let's see here. All right, I want to go back to and finish off the poster. I'm sure that we're not going to finish enough material today. But if we go back to the poster, if you haven't changed it, this particular poster of Judy's graph, I want to continue on to that. Up in the upper center, it says this time interval, that is the whole time, the time interval where those arrows are at, shows the greatest amplitudinal fluctuations of the day of the magnetic field lines, the explosions of multiple, many nuclear bombs released many electromagnetic pulses, EMPs, which give you very, very high impulse, impact, microsecond force, along with the heat. And as it's moving out, it's bringing all this reacting hot thermate particles and globs and larger particles and moving them all out with that impulse force. And they're also in the dust clouds, which are expanding. And even though they may, I know that they would cool off as they move out, but right near the towers, they're going to be hot. I don't know any people that survived close to the towers unless they were inside the building and didn't crush it. Those people that didn't get crushed. So each nuke with its charged particles producing long and ongoing disruptions. Now you might say, hey, this thing blew out. How come it didn't spike? Well, when you get these charged particles, either from high explosives or mini nukes, you got lots and lots of charged particles. What they do is they interact with the magnetic flux lines of force. They interact, like interferometry, and they distort the lines. And they stay up there. They don't just fall down. So you see, over a long, long period of time there, between the collapse of the towers and 7, that was your most active time. And then they stayed up there for hours and hours and maybe days. So that the graph ends here, but you can still see there's a lot of activity of those charged particles that are out there. And everybody knows, or should know, that nuclear explosions absolutely mess with the magnetic flux lines. And so do high explosives, because they both produce massive, massive amounts of charged particles that are moving. And once they get into that flux line, they're held there. They're held there. They don't just drop out. It takes quite a while for those flux lines to settle back down to what would normally be occurring. So here we got World Trade Center 3, 4, 5, and 6 were being nuked and are destroyed with high explosives, which also produce flux lines of distortion by production of charged particles and shock waves. The shock waves moved them out. And the last part down at the bottom, World Trade Center. Oh no, I already did that one. So all right. Let's take the arrow and move back to my pictures again. And I want to prove to you once and for all that nuclear reactions do distort the magnetic flux lines around the Earth. And so I realize that electromagnetic radiation, possibly from directed energy weapons, would definitely distort magnetic lines of force, but so also with nuclear explosions. All right, what I'd like you to do is to go to, let's see here. So we're still on page one. Let's go down to row four. Oh, no. Let's see. Row three. Number four, row three, number four. I've got these mixed up here. Or number five, rather. It's called 10D, the Earth's magnetosphere, magnetic lines of flux and force. Pull that one up. And this will be the convincer that this particular point, for sure, Judy's evidence can support with DWs, and so can nuclear and high explosives. So there's really no provable way to show either one is the absolute correct one, but I'm here to show that my four sources of explosives and incendiaries can produce all these effects, all of them, every single one that Judy has put forth. All right, he said, you'll see here, you'll see these blue lines distorted. On the left side, you see that they're small, and the Earth is in the center, and this is a magnetic field, like a magnet, and you have a solar wind coming from the sun. And those are nuclear particles from nuclear bombs, hydrogen bombs exploding. And those particles are going every direction from the sun, 93 million miles away, and just a tiny, 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 tiny sliver of that radiation hitting the Earth, but it certainly has a big effect. It says the electromagnetic field, with no external magnetic forces acting upon it, nor other forces, external forces acting upon it, is composed of symmetrically distributed electromagnetic lines of force. Because the Earth is constantly rotating magnet, based on the core of the Earth being composed of molten and rotating spherical mass of iron inside. The graphic shows those electromagnetic lines of flux being most massively distorted to the right, as this is the same direction in which the sun's solar wind is moving as a direct result of nuclear fusion explosions constantly occurring at the sun's surface. It's like the Earth's electromagnetic field is being blown vigorously as if by a hurricane of explosive magnetic force, charged particles, all from the sun. These are the same electromagnetic lines of flux that are being disturbed and distorted by the 9/11 days explosive events, mainly nuclear and high explosives. Maybe even possibly from the cutter charges, but I don't think they're that big. Both from the EMP, electromagnetic pulse, the high impact force, which is called impulse, very short time interval to give that, and charged particles produced by many, many nuclear explosions and our high explosive explosions. Okay, that's basically proof that the sun is distorting magnetic lines of flux all the time, 24/7. And these nuclear and high explosives do the same thing. I'm sure not as much. All right, let's go back. Let's see. Four. So we got 4-1. We got 3-5. Okay. 4-4. 4-4. All right. Let's go to. I don't know if I want to do that one. Let me see. 4-4. That would be the fourth row, fourth column, and the last down at the bottom. Nuclear explosions and the high explosions with their naturally resultant forceful EMPs. Pull that one up. Nuclear explosions and our high explosions with their naturally resultant most forceful electromagnetic pulses massively loaded with charged particles easily explain the distortions of Judy's magnetic flux lines. Now, I'm not going to read this all out, but there's your definition of electromagnetic pulse, which easily explains it, what's going on there. And then it says, Dr. Judy, all the explosions of the World Trade Center, or most of them, had to be mini nuclear explosions or high explosives explosions. And most all of them affected and distorted the magnetosphere readings of the magnetospheric recording stations of Alaska. This is a no-brainer explanation that can be verified by going to the link Wikipedia above. So DEWs are not the only thing that may explain disruptive effects to magnetosphere, and many nukes and high explosives are a far more viable explanation than DEWs. As already discussed in my previous 11 hours of interviews concerning your book, Where the Towers Go, there is a far simpler and more logic explanation for all your 43 points that must be explained, and they are thermite, mini nukes, high explosives, and cutter charges that cut through very thick steel instantaneously. Okay. Let's see here. Let's go down to the bottom. You'll see a comment that I made. All nuclear explosions and high explosives cause distortions to the magnetic flux lines that surround the Earth. This is common knowledge found in any dictionary and near physics textbook, especially where the nuclear explosive fields and the magnetic fields overlap and interdiscipline and intertwine. This common scientific knowledge should have given Dr. Judy a hint on which investigative direction to take in solving the connections that causes of the World Trade Center complex obliterations into micro-sized and smaller particles. Dr. Judy says there was no kerosene, no bombs, no nukes, no high heat, no explosives of any kind, even no airplanes, which I agree with no airplanes. So how did a DEW cut the airplane cutouts in the side of each World Trade Center Twin Tower? I would definitely like to know how DEWs do a cutout on each tower. Explain that in detail to me. I'd like to know what the weapon is, how it does it. Is it like a laser beam but it was instantaneous. All anomalies can be explained with high explosives, mini nukes, thermite, and cutter charges, and thick metal cutter charges, laid out in any shape you desire. What do you think the 150 Israeli art students were doing there in the towers before 9/11, using their art skills and planting the explosive thick steel cutting charges in any pattern desired, like a jigsaw puzzle, so that it was different shapes coming out? That would be easy to do. You all remember the large cutout chunks falling from the sky and trailing massive chemical trails of iron BBs and aluminum oxide and pulverized concrete and wallboard and everything else. All right, I'm finished that one. Anybody that's looking at that can check the rest of it out. Go back. Let's see, that was 4-4. Now we're going to go to 4-3. 4-3 is number 10A near all the mini nuclear and high explosives. Pull that one up. And we're going to get a summary type of, so we can cover a lot in real shortly. 10A near all the mini nuclear and high explosive events of 9/11 can account for the magnetospheric distortions observed at the Alaska stations. Okay, you see a bunch of pictures that I picked up. A lot of these are from different sites, and some are from Judy's site. The simplest answer is that all destructive explosive events that occurred at the World Trade Center complex in 9/11 produced abrupt shifts in the Earth's magnetic field, because that is what all nuclear explosions do, all nuclear explosions. And that is what the other high explosions also did, including the alleged entirely Twin Towers encased explosions. That is where the cutouts came from. The big explosion in the beginning, where they were able to video fakery the planes into that melting in ridiculous scenario inside each of the two towers. Uh-oh. Here we go. I just pushed the wrong button. Okay. Let's see, two towers. All the alleged hijacked airplanes that were officially claimed to be exclusively jet fuel explosions only. The following were the explosive events that occurred at the World Trade Center complex on 9/11, to where all explosive events were either mini nuclear bombs or high explosives, where in either case the magnetosphere was distorted by rapidly moving charged particles from these explosions, affecting its magnetic flux lines of force. The effects of the magnetosphere being long-lasting, as I showed on the graph, over many hours, even days, as the charged particles took a long time to settle out of the magnetosphere. Who knows how many days they could have stayed up there. You see the picture of the flux lines over there? And the next one shows the four planes supposedly going into the towers to make the cutouts with no damage, no falling debris particles, nothing. And then you see the big explosion from inside the tower. The planet materials, the cutout was going on at the same time. And to make it look like kerosene, who knows, maybe they had actual kerosene in there blowing up to blow out, make it look like a kerosene with many, 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 many gallons of kerosene fuel from the planes. The next picture is showing the bombs exploding off, the nukes pulverizing the material, also the cutter charges pulverizing, especially at the jigsaw puzzle points of breakage. The next one is Tower 2, which is starting to lean over. And then I believe they were in World Trade Center 7. I don't believe they were in outer space with satellites and beams coming down to do this. What happened with the directed energy weapons? Did they cause this? They would have to be the ones that caused this thing to tilt. And evidently they were the same things that that caused it to explode as it fell. So next picture down here is a possible suitcase nukes, grapefruit nukes or matchbox size nukes. Now I've never seen any matchbox size nukes, but they do have them, and I read an article yesterday that said that they can take mini nukes down to a nuclear force, I believe it said 1 kilogram. Not a kiloton, not a ton, but a kilogram mini nukes. So very small. That must be the matchbox, I guess. The next one over is World Trade Center 6 with the big cavity there, which I've explained. Been having for over a year. And I haven't seen anybody else explain that. And I do believe I listened to Morgan's show where he said they can't explain that, and I can explain it quite simply. Mini nuclear blasted holes in World Trade Center 6, 5, 4, and 3 in the form that you set them down there, like Claymore mines directed straight upwards, and you'll see all the debris encircling that outside part. That's all those floors that were lifted up and deposited right outside there. That's all that material, those floors. And I imagine a lot of it was dust and obliterated and blew off and all around along with the other towers. World Trade Center 7, World Trade 6, and World Trade Center 3. In the next picture, you see the holes. Those are mini nuke holes. And then finally, hazmat suits donned to avoid the World Trade Center nuclear contamination after effects. You could say, well, they were avoiding asbestos. I'm sure that was part of it, too. But asbestos can be taken care of with just a face mask and a real good filter. The hazmat suits protect from radiation, for our mini nuclear radiation, even though it may have been minimized, not like a little boy or a hydrogen bomb, big bomb, but it was there. And they recorded background radiation of 55 times normal, has been reported in a number of papers. Now, I didn't see it, so I can't prove it, but all I can do is report what I think is credible. All right, that's it for that one. Let's move back and pick up another one. Let's see, that was 4-3. Let's go to, 2-5. This would be row 2, column 5. These are the cars, the toasted cars. How much time we got, Jim?
You got about 3 minutes.
3 minutes? All right, let's cover this one. All right, high-heat toasted cars blocks away from the Twin Towers fried by reacting superthermate nanoparticles suspended in fast-expanding submicronized pyroclastic dust clouds that rapidly passed over them. And the other explanation would be the electromagnetic pulses, which originated with a million or multi-millions of degrees of heat, which instantaneously pulsed out with really, really high heat. I don't believe that was a million degrees or his cars would be melted. However, the impulses and the tiny unreacted, or I'd say reacting, nanothermite particles and globs that were carried by the dust clouds interacted with these cars. I can see of no effect that DEWs could have on that, because that would be like very low accuracy aiming of beams. Why would they go blocks away and fry these cars? And I would think that the research that whoever did this DEW stuff certainly wouldn't want to have all this peripheral collateral damage unaccounted for. So DEWs here don't make any sense whatsoever. Here's what I wrote. Mini nukes and nanothermite heated pyroclastic dust clouds that were very heavily laden with ongoing fast reacting nanothermite particles caused the instantaneous melting and warping and gelifying of the sheet iron and aluminum in the cars and vehicles as the particles forcefully collided with them. Rustification, superfast oxidation was also readily apparent immediately after the highly reactive and heavily thermite laden, highly heated dust clouds passed over them. When this military-grade thermetic material was being formulated and tested for field use, the military did not evidently examine the end products, especially when they were combined with many nuclear explosives or high explosives component. The thermetic reactions were not allowed to proceed to 100% completion because the nuke explosions and high explosive components interrupted the thermetic reactive process. Lots and lots and lots, perhaps tons and many tons of the original thermetic materials were left unreacted. It was these unreacted particles that probably reactively contact-fried the vehicles in the vicinity around the towers and also kept the molten iron melted and flowing in the basements of the three towers for over 3 months until all the material, that is the reactive thermite-laden dust, was removed. Very forceful EMPs assisted in moving the thermite particles.
It's up the rise in the church where a wedding has been. Is in a dream, waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? All the lonely people. Where do they all come from? All the lonely people. Kenzie, writing the words of a sermon that no one will hear. No one comes near. Look at him working, darning his socks in the night when there's nobody there. What does he care? All the lonely people. Where do they all come from?
Internet streaming radio. Our toll-free call-in number, and our website. Free MP3 archive links and interactive forums. RadioNetwork.com and click on the Make a Donation button.
Well, my reaction is that we have a volcano of arbitrary assertions that are almost universally wrong. I just don't know where to begin, but I've got to begin somewhere. Let's go to thermite. Dr. Wood and I have a co-authored piece, December 2006, and she deals with that in her book as well. But there's so many problems with thermite, which of course can be used for welding or to cut through steel, and the nano thermite is simply finely ground and just burns faster and hotter, but not so long. And heat transfer takes time. Why you would even bother with thermite if you got all these bombs, including many nukes, it's hard for me to say. You'd have to ask my opponent here. And thermite, you know, it slices and dices and can cut stuff that it can crash down. It cannot, it's inconsistent with the five areas of evidence out of the 12 I wanted to treat. The debris fields don't show any of this, you cannot. It's very hard to handle. You got to have over 4,000 degrees Fahrenheit for ignition. It's not even clear to me that you can have remote. If you had thermite around every beam on every floor on a tower, it would have over 31,000 ignitions you need, and it's not reliable. And of course, explosives. Now there's another area. Let's just deal with mini nukes. By the way, he has a kitchen sink theory. Kitchen sink, right? He's got thermite, conventional explosives like C4, and mini nukes. Well, just one comment about C4. As Dr. Wood points out in the book, C4 has a blast wave speed of 23,000 feet in the first second. Okay, per second. Okay. And so this idea of action movies where you, you know, you dive to get out of the way. That's 5 miles in 1 second. So where was this blast wave? You know, it's not in evidence. How are all these windows intact around? And then explosives. If you're going to have explosives from 110 stories on down, why isn't it throwing fragments off into, why do we only have fragments, chunks going in from the 20th floor on down in neighboring buildings? The only buildings destroyed were all had the prefix WTC. So there's so many things wrong with this. I mean, we need a show to just bury conventional explosives. Maybe another show to bury the mini nukes. Another show to bury. It's all in the book. Okay, now nukes. I love this idea of the kinder, gentler nukes. Nukes have light, blinding light. Where was the blinding light, folks, for a thermonuclear blast or multiple thermonuclear blasts? Didn't happen. And this sudden, by the way, of course, a nuke is another brand of kinetic energy weapon, okay, just like C4 or any kind of conventional explosive. And the heat is at least temporarily in the millions of degrees. Millions of degrees. It's not there. Where is the sound of these explosions going off? It's not there. It's squibs and squirts. That's another story that is maybe consistent with various versions of what happened. And the pressure, the blast wave. The seismic impact is next to nothing, is what he's claiming. He actually asserts in one of his posters that about the energy was about half that of the little boy bomb in Hiroshima, which was around 15 kilotons there. Okay, so you got over 7 kilotons. 1 kiloton blast is 4 on the Richter equivalent scale. It's in Dr. Wood's book. You know, it's just conventional wisdom, if you will, conventional scientific result. Now, this one had me laughing out loud when I looked at his assertions, which, you know, are all offered up as the great Chuck. We don't have any reference to the literature, et cetera, documentation. He actually says to hole out, you know, hollowed out the building 6 is hollowed out. About half of it's gone, all in the center. There's there's only negligible debris in this 8-story building, in this hollowed out, cratered out building. And he actually says, this is explained by, I counted them, 34 nuclear bombs. That are, you know, the capitalist bomb, the radioactive neutrons. Why he wants that, I don't know. But whatever kind of thermonuclear blast you've got, you know, fusion, it's basically a kinetic weapon. Yeah, and it's got the radiation, et cetera. But the point is, where's your proof of concept? Just where's the timing on all this, for example? You know, most explosives become unstable at over 70 degrees centigrade. So there's just so many problems. Now, let's go to Chernobyl, which wasn't even a nuclear blast. It's we'll call it a meltdown here of a reactor. Okay. This is treated in Dr. Wood's book beginning on page 372. So I'm going to turn there. Consider the actual page in this section is 375. Consider what happened at Chernobyl in the early hours of April 26, 1986. Figure 388B shows the remains of reactor 4 after it was destroyed by a steam explosion. Water and molten metal don't get along well. Although the damage was not caused by a nuclear explosion, radioactive fallout from this accident was measured around the world as shown in figure 388A. If a nuclear bomb had been used to destroy the WTC, radiation from it would have been detected around the world, and there also would have been a seismic signature. No he's got nukes with no radiation. Excellent. This is a global Chernobyl spread radiation all the way around the globe. So we have got convenient assumptions. So now here's one more aspect of the hollowing out and the holes. Okay, hollowing out of WTC6. Dr. Wood in the holes chapter points out the verticality, the puzzling, just one more puzzling, incredible, you'll recall the holes in Building 5, the hole on Liberty Street, etc. Well, let's just stick with the WTC 6 hole. It obviously calls for verticality. Well, bombs don't explode vertically as if they're in a tunnel. This is just beyond ridiculous. Come on, they're spherical. They're radiate. They're radio. They blow in every direction. That is a bomb. That is a nuclear bomb. That is C4, or you name your favorite conventional explosives. And he asserted earlier, that nukes can turn these fragments to micron and smaller size. Show me the literature. No, they don't. They fragment things. You know, the French call it brisance. They're big on studying these properties of different explosives. So I'm going to go on to really a summation nearly. Well, let me mention three other areas of evidence that. Once we arrive at the point where, Sherlock Holmes said, quote, once you eliminate the impossible, whatever remains, no matter how improbable, must be the truth, unquote. And that's what we've got here. None of these, is it possible that one, jet fuel and office fires, two, conventional controlled demolition, three, thermite or any of its variants, four, conventional explosives like RDX and C4, or five, nuclear explosions destroyed the WTC? An unequivocal no. The answer is no. It's impossible because they're so inconsistent with the evidence that what happened at the crime scene. And we've got to consider all the facts, as Dr. Wood teaches us. The evidence rules all of these methods out. These five technologies don't work. Okay? So, we are at the stage, what happened, what we lay alongside the facts at the World Trade Center against the properties, the known behavior of these five methods, and they are completely inconsistent. They don't work. So, and regarding heat, okay, I'll deal with that. If you go to Chapter 13, there's devastating proof that it's not a high heat event. There aren't any piles of burned bodies. There's no reports of survivors burned by the dust cloud or thermitic material. The vehicles are burned. People didn't. And this is clue you in that there's something unconventional going on here. That point to field effects. Okay, we have street signs unburned, trees unburned, paper unburned, flags unburned. We have, hydraulic lines that are not boiled. We have no steam explosions. We had a 1.2-inch rainfall on September 14, 3 days after the event. Where is all this? Why isn't all this molten metal resulting in steam explosions? Where is all this molten metal running, etc.? You know, it's just Peter Tully, Mark Lizzo of Controlled Demolition, Inc., Leslie Robertson of the principal engineering firm, that they never saw any. Where are the melted boots? Where are the incinerated feet, etc.? So, okay, let's, I gotta mention, three other chapters here, before I sum up. And that is, the Tesla Hutchinson effect, which is discussed in chapter 17. Hurricane Aaron, the Earth's magnetic field, these shifts, which is, gee, I don't have the chapter cited there. But then, and then finally we have all three put together in chapter 20 to discuss. Now what Dr. Wood explains what's going on here. Once you find that these other, quote, conventional technologies, unquote, can't account for what happened at the World Trade Center, you look around for something else. And Dr. Wood points out quite nicely, injecting a personality in there with the cars, the toasted cars. She had an aha moment. I can't locate it right now, but let's take the time to do that. Toasted Cars is chapter 11, and I think it was car. Yeah, okay, here it is. Here it is. On page 215, she says, while analyzing the photograph on figure 214B, I first realized that the mechanism of destruction of the WTC must have involved the interference of energy fields. This was my first aha moment. I was not at all familiar with energy weapons, nor did I know if such a thing existed. It wasn't something I had thought about or looked for. However, my scientific area of expertise has to do with a type of optical interferometry, so that I am very familiar with interference of energy in the optical range. Visible light constitutes only one small range of the wavelengths along the entire electromagnetic spectrum. The same principles of interference that exist for light waves can exist for other wavelengths as well. Now, if you look at that picture, figure 214, this damage to this car is incredible. How can this happen? Because there's an abrupt boundary between the kind of the high wax rear door on both sides and the burned appearance of the front door. You know, normal fires don't do this with this abrupt boundary. So something strange was going on, and the more Dr. Wood looked, the more she was able to discover that it leads to field effects. And I'm going to look in the underused glossary by yours truly, because it kind of serves as a an index. Well, if we look in the, this is on page 490, in the back of the book, we see that, well, we have DOE, see, directed energy weapons. The term directed energy weapons is a category of technology that involves energy that is directed and used as a weapon. DOE is a directed energy technology used as a weapon. Microwaves and radio frequency signals are a type of directed energy, but are not considered a DOE unless used as a weapon. The Soviet term for this is energetics, which includes conventional DOE as well as unconventional DOE. Conventional DOE. Okay, so some types do are the following. You have cold-directed energy weapons, i.e. created by field effects. You have hot-directed energy weapons, e.g. from lasers or microwaves. You have directed free energy weapons, free energy technology used as a weapon. So what I would say is, hey, after all else fails, you've got to look around, and that's what, and, you know, do we have any precedent for this, or can we discover what's going on here? Well, that's what chapter 17 on the Tesla Hutchinson effect is doing. Well, has anything like this occurred before? There's so many strange things going on, like the melding of dissimilar materials, like paper and metal in the one piece of a filing cabinet left from the world, from the towers. How about rounded holes in glass? How about levitation of heavy objects? Well, we look at Tesla and Hutchinson, and we'll call that outside the mainstream of conventional science. And by, as an aside, by the way, I'm not all that impressed with mainstream physics and science, who are mostly a bought up you know, adjunct to the defense establishment anyway. So, all right. Now, Hurricane Aaron, Mr. Baldwin misspoke there completely, because if we look at chapter 18, which begins on 395, and just go to the Dr. Wood, hey, she's doing research. Well, hey, this is, look at this. This is weird. What's going on there? I'm going to find the end of the chapter on Hurricane Ann. What does she conclude on this? She says, on page 410 at the end of the chapter, the use of directed energy technology on the huge scale of its use during 9/11 might very well have had weather-altering effects. Such technology might have been able to draw on the vast energies and field effects of the enormous Tesla coil known as Hurricane Aaron, which was, had more energy than Katrina. Thoughts of this kind are justified, even necessitated by the fact of Aaron's having been treated as a carefully kept secret, much like a state secret. So the thrust of this, in my opinion, is, well, is it an effect of a directed energy weapon in operation? Is it a cause or a source of energy, or is it a coincidence? That's the way she treated the shift in the Earth's magnetic field as well. You know, what's going on here? Look at the data on page 414, and you see coinciding with the destruction of the World Trade Center, well, right from the initial holes in the buildings, you start seeing crazy movements in the magnetic field. Well, I call them crazy because I'm not an expert in this area. So, for example, on page 415, she writes, immediately before the first event at WTC1, the magnetometer readings began to fluctuate from the average. These fluctuations increased, and at each destructive event from then on, the values shifted dramatically, either up or down. In all cases, the fluctuations, these readings were dramatically different from normal, especially in their timing. So I don't think Dr. Wood says, hey, this is consistent with field effects. Right, it's not as if we have 100% knowledge of these weapons. It's simply that, hey, all the other propositions do not work. They, for reasons I hope people can grasp at this point. So, what we have, and Jim, what's the timing?
5 minutes, 30 seconds.
Okay. We, now, Mr. Baldwin has been, shall we say, I think I need to get into this for a minute or two, and that is, if we look at his posters, he's got some very unprofessional things that I am not fond of. For example, one of his posters, he refers to the supporters of Dr. Judy Wood as people of, quote, religious-like blind faith, unquote. He names me and Eric Larson, who was instrumental in getting this published, and is a very accomplished English professor. He writes beautifully. He also terms Dr. Wood self-misguided, who, quote, passes this misguidance along to her clueless, adoring groupies, unquote, including yours truly. He calls Eric Larson a scientifically blinded lemming misled by another scientifically blind person, namely Dr. Judy Wood, unquote. I urge anyone to look at the book, open it to any page, and you will find a very accomplished physical scientist. He repeatedly addresses Dr. Wood as Dr. Judy and Judy. He does not know her. He doesn't hold a PhD. He has no research publication record that I know of. So this familiarity is a form of disrespect, and it's an attempt to use ridicule, which is the first weapon of politics. Finally, he, along in the same, on the same topic, he provides this as a commentary for my favorite photograph on the cover. Her book's Fantasyland DreamWorks hypothesis of totally unprovable existence of scaled up dues. she actually does remark, so this is impossible, he's saying. Well, his kitchen sink, it can't even work practically. Can't even work because of the interaction of these things. Are you going to blow off a nuke and a C4 and light the thermite? How does this the thousands of items interact? You know, and why do you even need them? You know, it's just, and then you have none of the characteristics, none of the effects that we should observe from using these technologies. Okay. In the future now, in the next few weeks, I'm going to put up some of these remarks in a polished form on my blog. Go visit nomoregames.net. Go visit drjudywood.com to get the best investigation that we have. Okay. Do I want to open another page? So what are we down to now, Jim?
2 minutes less.
Okay. Okay. Now, let's go. I'm going to look at nukes again, since Mr. Baldwin has this in his hip pocket as the kind of the ultimate. The nukes supposedly were used... also didn't break the bathtub and flood Manhattan. Didn't have enough. And here they are on the floor or in the first sub-basement, I gather, under the WTC-6. He's got a lot of problems here. There's no reason to believe anything he says because it makes no sense. It would shake, nukes would shake the ground a lot. And they'd show up on the seismic charts. But he promises, I guess, he's going to use a magic nuke. You have to show proof of concept that they could be timed to go off at precise times without altering the function of the others, which I don't, he's got a big problem there too. Why he wanted a neutron bomb is not clear to me, because that's what you're doing is retuning the nuke to get more radiation to kill people, but it's still basically a kinetic energy weapon. And in Wikipedia, they say no country is known to deploy them, unquote. Well, they could, but at least that's one commentary. They don't leave the infrastructure intact. And besides, we're trying to account for an infrastructure that isn't there, that disappeared. And finally, he shows no evidence that it can convert materials, building materials, to micron and smaller size.
Morgan, thank you. Thank you very much. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, thanking my special guests, Chuck Baldwin and Morgan Reynolds, for being here.
Yesterday, all my troubles seemed so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay.